Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, this is Joanna Paxinu and you're listening to At the Movies with Joanna. I am so excited and thrilled today. We have a very special guest, Cass Warner. She is the granddaughter of Harry Warner, one of the four brothers who created Warner Brothers Studios, one of the most powerful and entertaining studios in the history of America. They created fantastic films, films that changed our society, our culture. They were also the home of some of our greatest stars, Betty Davis, Jimmy Cagney, Humphrey Bogart. And Cass Warner has written a book and produced a marvelous documentary about the brothers Warner. It is about her extraordinary family, and it is also a very moving tribute to her grandfather, Harry Warner. And Cass is also herself a writer and producer and founder of Warner Sisters, who is carrying on the tradition of Warner Brothers to produce films that educate, entertain, and enlighten. Welcome, Cass Warner. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
What a pleasure. Thank you, Joanna, for having me.
Oh, our pleasure entirely. I'd really like to get right into the Brothers Warner. You wrote a book, and you did a marvelous documentary of it that I saw and totally loved. And I would like to know if you could share with us why you wrote the book and why you made the documentary about your family, especially your grandfather.
Well, you know, hopefully everybody's got someone who touches their life in a very meaningful way at a young age, and happy to say my grandfather, Harry, was one of those people. And I just, you know, got to know him by being around him a lot as a child and witnessing, you know, what attracted him to things like raising racehorses and growing his own food and raising his own prized chickens and beef. And he was really a gentleman farmer, and he loved the ranch, which we went out to every weekend and often saw him during the week. He was just a down-to-earth, literally down-to-earth, very caring human being, and not just for me, but I think anybody that I witnessed, you know, even the janitor at the studios, he would call by their first name and stop and talk with them. You know, you just observe things like that as a child. So he was a special being, and I was sad to see him go when, you know, I was 10 years old. He passed away, but before he passed away, I was at his bedside, and he took my hand and wasn't speaking at the time. He had had a stroke, but he sat up in bed and spoke my name and then squeezed my hand, and I felt, you know, transferred over to me the wonderful responsibility of really finding out who he was and who the brothers were and what was important to them as a company and why they made films, you know, socially conscious films. And, you know, just I went on a journey. I went on a journey in my early 20s to really find out, you know, who he was and what was meaningful to them and important to them. And I'm glad I did, because nobody else in the family did, and things, people were dying and things were disappearing, and I sort of became the family private investigator and collector of photos and other things I could get a hold of.
Wow, what a wonderful tribute, though. And you know, after seeing the documentary and hearing you talk about your grandfather, he seemed like such an honorable man.
Very.
Would you consider, I know all four brothers participated in the creation of Warner Brothers, but would you consider your grandfather the kind of leader, the leading force behind the whole concept of the studio?
You know, they were an incredible team, and they all had their own individual jobs that they did very well. But Grandpa was really the strategic general, you know, the guy leading the team. And he was the one who did a lot of traveling, you know, and opening up film exchanges all over the world and seeing the conditions, you know, of our world at that time. And he was very affected by that. And he also, you know, was from New York and you know, the Depression hit in 1933 and he felt it come. I mean, he was really very in touch with what was going on with the man on the street. And that's why I think they made the kinds of movies that they did in the 30s and 40s. But they, to answer your question, I would have to say yes, because he felt so strongly, you know, about the using of film to educate, because they all came from not having an education and not being able to go to school, but rather having to work to survive, and also to inform people, you know, because the news was not as readily available, certainly as it is today, and so films, he felt, were an instrument of peace and an instrument of understanding of our fellow man.
Well, you also gave an example of a film with Paul Muni on the escape from a chain gang that changed.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that film and what it brought about?
Well, what's interesting about that film is, it's, you know, I'm a fugitive from a chain gang. It created such an outrage when people saw the film that the prison conditions changed as a result. It really, you know, people were shackled and, you know, on chain gangs, not just African Americans, but, you know, Caucasians. And it really outraged people. And so, you know, I'm delighted to say that, you know, things changed socially, justice-wise, because of that film.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful, wonderful achievement. And I love the motto that they had of making films that educate, entertain, and enlighten, and using the film as a force to bring about change, not only to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you would go on the Warner lot when you were a child with your father, Milton Sperling, who was a two-time Academy Award nominee. Could you tell us just a little bit about what it felt like to be on a Warner Brothers lot?
Magical. It was, you know, I really equate it to better than going to the circus, because, you know, there was such an incredible... it's such a cooperative art form, and the people who were on the lot back then, you couldn't get on the lot unless you worked there or were, you know, doing something on the lot. You just couldn't get on the lot. It was even more secure than it is today, and so, you know, I just felt very privileged. I knew I was privileged, and took advantage of it, you know, by wandering around and befriending, you know, people who were making movies and watching the magic happening. And, you know, even because my father worked there as a writer-producer, Milton Sperling, he had the pleasure of making movies and from the very beginning, you know, would include me in the story meetings, because I was interested, and he would, even before I could read, I remember him handing me scripts, you know, to feel like I was participating in the meeting. But just the pleasure I saw being exchanged between him and the writer and the people on the set, and the fun, you know, that I saw from people knowing this was, it was kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of godlike, you know, creating something from nothing. And everybody was participating in this creation to share with lots of people. Oh, I remember people like Clint Walker was doing Cheyenne when I was, I think, around 10 or 12. And my father knew that I had a crush on him. And he sent me over to deliver a message to, you know, the set. And I didn't know that's where Clint was. And he greeted me and gave me a hug. And my life has never been right since. I mean, you know, how do you beat that?
Oh, that's sweet. So do you feel that that all of these experiences kind of brought you into wanting to grow up and make your own films?
You know, it's interesting. I witnessed a lot of people problems. You know, I mean, actors and actresses and people in the business are people, and they have problems, and sometimes they get blown out of proportion because they are who they are. And but you know, my family was a very socially conscious family, very caring about the world, and not interested in being in the limelight. I think that's true of truly comfortable, secure people who know, you know, they're creative and they're content with that. They don't need, you know, the adoration of others so much. I really wanted to raise a family, and so that was the first thing. I mean, I did do some acting in my 20s and realized the roles for women were not something I would be proud of doing. At the time, that turned me into a writer and then a producer, because I realized that was how you got the things you wanted done. You know, but you know, raising kids was important to me, and I have four children, I'm happy to say, and three grandchildren, and you know, that's an important part of my life. So I created around that. You know, the book came out in 93. It's now the Brothers Warner, with the same title as the documentary, and it's available on Amazon. But I, you know, the documentary was extremely important to me. I was going to do it as a miniseries after the book came out, and then the documentary was really what I saw needed to happen first before any other fictionalized versions of the family story came out.
So you wanted to be sure that the truth was out there.
Yeah, I really did. I you know, got back a spec script that was all about the dirt and scandal, and I went, this is not what I've worked so hard, you know, to get to this point. You know, the purpose was really to correct history, to make history known, to honor my grandfather and the brothers, and to carry forward, you know, a legacy which I'm very proud of.
Yes, you should be. It's a wonderful legacy, and not everyone has that. And I'm so glad you're sharing it with the public, because it's just a wonderful, wonderful story. What reactions have your family members had to the book and the documentary?
Oh, I'm delighted at the reaction. I mean, part of the purpose was to bring the family closer together, because there was this battle between great uncle Jack and my grandfather, which created, you know, distance, and so it's doing that. I mean, I'm back in touch with cousins I haven't been in touch with for years, and it's very rewarding, very fulfilling.
That's wonderful. You have said that film is an incredibly powerful communication tool, and that filmmakers have an ethical responsibility. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm coming from the family I come from, and knowing how powerful, you know, like just in my own experience, you know, watching a movie and really getting a new viewpoint, you know, from getting inside the skin of a character, or living, you know, an hour and a half of someone's life and emotions, really changed my life in many instances. And that's why the educate, entertain, and enlighten, I think, is why they came up with that. But I equate this medium to a tribal drum, because it carries emotions and intellect and philosophy, and people who watch it start to hum that tune, whether they're conscious of it or not. So it's kind of subliminal. the results are of this form of entertainment. So that's sort of the best description. It is our tribal drum. It is the media is our tribal drum, and that's why I really am opposed to, the news creating all this fear and distress and oh my God, what do we do? And I think we're in a wonderful time period right now. I think we're in a time of opportunity. People, need to just get smarter, more innovative, more creative, shed bad habits and be conscious of what the bad habits were financially, and, just out-create it. Just make it. And this is what, when people's necessity levels create innovative new ways of solving problems.
Yes, and it's wonderful to say, to look at this time that can be troubling, and there are concerns, but to look at it as an opportunity and perhaps go within and just keep focused on our dreams and our goals and just to keep going and not to stand still and be overtaken by fear and worry. It's very important to
It's very
keep
important.
Focused.
And I hope, I hope most people will address it that way, because the other way is destructive. And I actually resent the amount of bad news that, is thrown at us every day. I'm trying to balance those scales a bit.
Well, it is true, because we have 24-hour news channels on TV, radio, the internet. We are constantly bombarded, and I think balance is the magic word. I think you have to be aware of what's going on, but you don't need to be drowning in it 24 hours a day. You need the balance.
Exactly. So the films, the films that Warner Sisters and wants to continue making are of that ilk, of that kind of sensibility.
That's wonderful. Well, we look forward to seeing more films by you. I did want to ask about a very wonderful thing that you created called the Dream Factory.
Mm-hmm.
That you created to help make one's dream a reality. Please tell us about that. That sounds wonderful.
This was, again, a result of just observing, as a mother, all the interest that my children had and how I, as a mother, could nurture, fan the fire, just observe and fan the fire. And then I realized that my family is really a perfect example of, people who came from nothing, just made a decision somewhere along the line, all of them, that, they would go for this big, big dream, this big goal. And the thing that I discovered in researching their story, which was so inspiring, was that every challenge, every stop, everything that, where they came across someone saying, you can't do that, they would use that as an incentive to do the next thing that they did. And God, what a great philosophy of life. And so I went, I'd love to use them to inspire people from all walks of life to, first of all, know what their dream is. If you're not aware of what your dream is, you wake up in the morning and you go, well, I guess I'll go to work instead of waking up and being excited because that day you're going to do something, that's going to get you closer to what you envision for yourself at the end of your road or at the, top of your road or whatever. And so I realized that most of what happens with most people is they go, I want to be a prima ballerina, you know, tomorrow, right? Instead of, okay, where are you today? And what do you need to do? What's your next step?
Right.
What's just your doable next step? Something that you can really achieve in not that long amount of time, and know, you know, that you're getting closer by doing that, and also be willing to have the dream change. You know, you may, you know, as you're, you know, using the ballerina, you may discover you like being an instructor more than you like doing the dancing, you know, but you wouldn't know that if you didn't try it first, you know.
Yes.
Or music is more your thing than dancing. You know, it's just exposing yourself to that experience that you think you want to have, and knowing that you can change, but also that you can achieve where you want to go, as big as it may seem. So, I'm using the family as an example of that, which I can do easily because I know their history so well. And the other is creating a library. I'm creating a library. I call it Conversations with Cass, and it's really an inspirational library where I have sat down with people like Matthew McConaughey and, you know, Giovanni Ribisi and, you know, other people from other walks of life. I want it to be from plumbers to presidents because, you know, we need plumbers too who are passionate about what they do. But it's the passion. You know, it's the passion for the game.
Yes.
And capturing that on film. And, you know, how, for instance, Matthew McConaughey, you know, decided to go on this journey that he's on as an actor. You know, what inspired him to do that, and then what worked and what didn't work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now that he's at this point, you know, what's his next game? Because there's always got to be, when you get to a certain point or a certain plateau in your dream, you know, you got to have another one to go for. Otherwise, you know, you crash and burn.
Yes. Well, you always have to keep reaching.
That's right.
It keeps you challenged, too.
Yep, that's exactly right. So the Dream Factory has actually three aspects to it, the one of knowing what your dream is and getting help to get to the next step. And then the other, you know, is the library, you know, watching people who have done it and learning from their experiences. And then the third is getting video cameras in the hands of children who go out into their community and find, I call it the hero next door, and do a documentary, you know, with the help of someone who instructs them how to do everything.
That's
make a short documentary about someone in their community who, you know, is doing something wonderful for the community. And it gets, you know, it covers a lot of bases. It gets them educated in how to tell a story, use a camera, and you know, find somebody who in their community is doing something positive.
That's wonderful. What a wonderful opportunity for children and future filmmakers. Now, you mentioned you have these inspiring conversations. Are they available? Can people listen to them if they go to your website?
You know what? If you go to conversationswithcass.com, that's where you can see the link. And then if you go to warnersisters.com and just email me which interviews you'd like, you know, to see, then I can help you out on that.
Okay. And if people wanted to purchase the documentary, the Brothers Warner, would they also go to your website?
Yes, exactly. Yes, warnersisters.com.
Warnersisters.com. Great.
Exactly.
Well, and I think people, when they think of their dreams, they have to remember that your grandfather and his brothers started out with nothing. They were not educated. They didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have a lot of connections. They just had a lot of natural ability and intelligence and dreams, and they were willing to work hard. And that, I don't think that's changed. I think you need those same qualities today. Do you think so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a frame of mind. You know, it's really, really a philosophy of life that I hope to, you know, encourage others to have.
Well, you're doing a great deal of encouraging on many fronts. I think it's wonderful. Can you share with us future projects or anything you're currently working on?
Yes. I've got a pet project called The Shade of Gray, which I call my To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't know if your audience would know that film with Gregory Peck, and it was an award-winning film. It was told through the eyes of a child
yes.
witnessing prejudice and
yes.
and learning about prejudice. And this film, A Shade of Gray, is about two young kids who are best friends and growing up in 1943 in a poor part of Oklahoma. And it's the summer before they go into first grade, and they hear the N-word, the nigger word, and they go on a search for the meaning of the word, and how it's about how their friendship survives, you know, our adult prejudice and sanity. And it's something I'm very dear to my heart. It's based on a true story. It's wonderfully written. The writer, Jack Skinner, was taught by the best, who was, in my mind, Waldo Salt, who did Coming Home and Midnight Cowboy. And it's character driven. You really get into the skin of the people in this town, and into the hearts and minds and soul of these two little boys. And it's got it's all budgeted and scheduled and ready to go, and some really great talent attached. And so I'm on the search for, you know, the almighty dollar.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like a very, very beautiful story. And I can't believe it, but our time is almost up. And I hope you come back and visit us again. We'd love to talk to you more about your thoughts and what you're doing and this wonderful movie you're working on now. And you have an open invitation to come back, and I hope you will join us again.
Oh, it would be my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's been a thrill and an honor and pure joy. Thank you,
okay,
Kat Warner.
Thank you. All the best to you all out there.
Thank you. And
okay.
Thank you, listeners. You've been listening to Joanna Paxinou at The Movies with Joanna on Sedona Talk Radio, and that's a wrap.